Hello, I'm Bruce Ballas, and I've been asked to talk to you a little bit about child rearing. Now, I have to start with kind of a disclaimer in that I am not an expert in child rearing. I was once upon a time, actually. I was somebody who had two little children, and the way I approach things is to read everything I can about what I'm dealing with. And so I read all about child discipline, about child rearing and bringing up in the right way, and I produced a class, which was four sessions that I called Evenings with Parents, and I thought I was an expert in child rearing. And then my third child was born, and the kids got a little older, and I decided I know very little. I think one person put it very well. He said, I used to have 10 commandments for raising children. He says, but now, he says, I have a few suggestions that I hope are good for you. Well, today it's going to be on that end of things, that we're going to look at a few suggestions that maybe will be helpful to you. I want to begin with just a statement about Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson now plays football for the New Orleans Saints. He was with the Minnesota Vikings. He was an MVP a few years back. He was arrested for something that you don't see professional football players arrested for very often. I mean, nowadays in the United States here, we see our professional sports people arrested for drug abuse, for spousal abuse, and that sort of thing. Sometimes for playing, you know, the stock market a little too close with insider information, those kind of things. But he was arrested because he spanked his child. One of the commentators on that, a man named Nirvana Reginald Gale, wrote this in the LA Times after he had been arrested and then released. This is what he said. This morning I was watching First Take on ESPN with Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, and Kerry Champion. They were talking about the recent plight of the football player Adrian Peterson and his plea deal for the child abuse of beating his son. He got a simple slap on the wrist, kind of a play on words there, of a misdemeanor and 80 hours of community service. There were no additional requirements for individual counseling or parenting classes, which I would have insisted on. As the three ESPN commentators debated the subject, it was clear about their own reticence on this topic, with all of them citing that they too were beat with instruments of some sort coming up, and all turned out all right. For so long, folks have used that old Bible passage, spare the rod and spoil the child, to justify all manner of corporal punishment and child abuse. People beat their children to control them and get them to do what they want, and then justify it by their archaic interpretation of this Bible statement and the fact that they were raised that way and turned out all right. That phrase that he quoted there, spare the rod and spoil the child, as he calls it, that old Bible passage, is not in the Bible. I've been recently studying those phrases that we think are in the Bible but are not. Things like, you know, the Lord helps those who help themselves. 60% of believers in our country here believe that that is in the Bible. It's not. There are all sorts of phrases that we think are in the Bible, but they're not. This is one of them. Spare the rod and spoil the child is not in the Bible. Now, the Bible does say something very similar. If you go to Proverbs 13, verse 24, this is what it says. It says, whoever spares the rod hates their children, but the one who loves their children is careful to discipline them. Now, it's a similar thought, but it's a little different. And yet, this gets us into some dangerous territory, because we have to talk about, do you spank children or do you not spank them? And that is a very controversial subject in today's world. In fact, the state of Delaware has now outlawed spanking of children, and the law is written, as critics say, very loosely. In fact, the key phrase is that anyone who causes harm or causes pain to their children can be put into jail for up to 2 years. Although the nation of Brazil has outlawed spanking, so that if you spank your children, you're putting yourself at risk of going to prison. And yet, here the Bible says, he who spares the rod hates his child. What do we do with that? In fact, if you look elsewhere in Proverbs, you find similar kinds of statements. Now, the book of Proverbs is a book of writings. In other words, it's Solomon's reflections and others, reflections on life. It's common ideas of what they see happening in life. And so he who spares the rod, hates his children, was something that Solomon saw, that children, some children could grow up without boundaries and they grew up poorly. And so he's giving an observation here. But he says it over and over again because it must have importance. Here's another statement. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. That's Proverbs 22, verse 15. Or this one, 23, Proverbs. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. Punish him with a rod and save his soul from death. Or this one from Proverbs 29, verse 15. The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to itself disgraces his mother. Now, it's fascinating. You know, when I was looking at these phrases that aren't in the Bible, this phrase, spare the rod and spoil the child, was actually written by a poet named Samuel Butler back in 1663. And he took it to mean almost exactly the opposite of what we say when we use that phrase. He wrote a poem, and it was a satirical poem, and it was kind of attacking the legalistic kind of life of the Puritans in England at that time. Here are the two lines in which he mentions this phrase. What medicine else can cure the fits of lovers when they lose their wits? Love is a boy by poet styled, then spare the rod and spoil the child. Now, it's poetry. So how do you interpret it? Well, what he's saying is here is that, you know, when a kid falls in love, remove all restrictions from him. Just let them go when kids fall in love and let them be what they want to be. Now, we use it just the opposite way. What does it mean then to spare the rod, or he who spares the rod hates his children? Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Now, in order to understand that, you have to look at what is being referred to as the rod. A shepherd had two pieces of vital equipment. The one was his shepherd's crook, and you've probably seen pictures of those long staffs with a curved end. And that was used by the shepherd for a variety of things. He walked with it, but the curved end gave him something he could haul a sheep back if they were wandering off, and he could sometimes, you know, tap them on the back if they were going in the wrong place. It was a very useful instrument. And then he had a rod. He had a staff and the rod. The rod was a club made out of hard wood, maybe about that long, and it was used primarily as a defensive weapon. In fact, it's referred to that way in Psalm 23, which you probably know if you've been walking with Jesus for very long. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. And then it gets to that verse 4, which says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And so the rod was primarily a defensive kind of weapon. It was intended to ward off any wild animal that might come or any person who might come and try to steal the sheep. And so a sheep in Psalm 23 should take comfort in the fact that the shepherd has this rod. But on occasion, the rod would also become a form of discipline for the shepherd. If a sheep was going far astray and continued to do that, would not respond to the taking back with the staff, the shepherd would take the rod and hit him on his hindquarters. Now, he wasn't trying to damage the sheep or beat the sheep. He was simply trying to give the sheep correction, something that sheep could respect. In fact, if a sheep got so used to the rod, a shepherd could throw the rod in front of the sheep, and that would be enough to have the sheep scurry back toward the flock. See, the point here is that sheep are dumb. They are stupid animals. And so when Scripture compares us to sheep, it's like we're really dumb. A sheep could wander off, and it happened often that they would wander off from a flock and they would go off, sometimes walk off a cliff. Or they'd walk into water and their wool would soak up the water and they would drown. And so the shepherd had a very important task of trying to keep these sheep together who weren't too bright, keep them together, keep them safe, keep them fed, keep them provided for. And that would allow them to grow, and that would allow them to get to the point where they were producing wool or eventually food for the people for whom the shepherd was working. And so that's the shepherd's rod. Now, what does this mean for us? Well, I think it means more than just do we spank a child or not spank a child. What it means is that we are to look at this in a big picture of disciplining a child, taking a child who will wander off in unproductive, unfruitful directions. And so the wise parent, or wise grandparent, helps give correction to that child to get them back on a path which will lead them to fullness. Now, children, much like sheep, sometimes aren't very bright. Many years ago, the state of Minnesota in the United States was trying to figure out what is the source of crime. Crime rates were going up during that time, and they wanted to get at the root of crime. They didn't want to just deal with the fact that they should build more prisons or they should have more police officers. They wanted to figure out, how do we stop crime earlier? And so they did a study on crime, the root of crime. And here's one of their conclusions. Every baby, they said, starts life as a little savage. How do you like that? He is completely selfish and self-centered. He wants what he wants when he wants it. His bottle, his mother's attention, his playmate's toy, his uncle's watch. Deny these, and he seethes with rage and aggressiveness, which would be murderous were he not so helpless. He is, in fact, dirty. He has no morals, no knowledge, no skills. This means that all children, not just certain children, are born delinquent. If permitted to continue in the self-centered world of his infancy, given free rein to his impulsive actions to satisfy his wants, every child would grow up a criminal, a thief, a killer, a rapist. Now, that's not a Christian person writing this. That's not geared toward a Christian audience. It was geared toward a secular audience to try to understand kids. Now, we understand that because we have theology which says that we are born with a bent to us. It's called iniquity, and it comes from Adam and Eve and their first choice to sin. But we have a tendency toward evil, and so one of the jobs of the parents is taking children who have that tendency toward what is wrong, what is unhelpful, what can be hurtful, and correct it. Bring correction into that life. I love the way one person I read put it. They said that the rod really stands for all the insight, all the knowledge, all the spiritual transformation that a child is going to need to grow up effectively, to grow up to be a responsible adult, and more importantly, a follower of Jesus Christ. So, that's what it means that he who spares the rod hates his child. If you withhold that, you're going to let your child go into areas where they are going to experience great pain in their life. Now, having said that, I want to close by just giving some practical suggestions about parenting. Now, as I said, I am a father of three children. I am a grandfather to 10 children, so I'm having a little bit of experience in dealing with children. I've read a lot about dealing with children, but again, I don't claim to be an expert. These are things I've kind of observed, so this is not in the line of 10 commandments for rearing your children. It's more like, here's a few suggestions that I found to be helpful, and I hope they're helpful to you. So first suggestion, when you are dealing with disciplining your child, is simply this. Choose your rules or your boundaries carefully. Now, as we have a child growing up, first-time parents have a tendency to make very strict rules and sometimes about some really kind of unimportant things. When our first child, our son, was just getting to toddle a little bit. He couldn't walk on his own, but he could walk around the coffee table. Well, in the coffee table in our living room, we had a cactus arrangement. And I had served during my seminary years in a small church in Arizona. And as a going away gift, one of the families gave us this beautiful arrangement of various cacti. And it was lovely because they don't need watering much or care much, and they thrive. And so we have this sitting on our coffee table. And our son begins to get up, climb up next to the coffee table, and walk around it. And because he's curious of mine, he was reaching out to grab one of those cacti. And we decided that we should teach him not to do that. And so every time he'd reach for one of those cacti, we would take his hand and slap it a little bit, and we'd say, no. And we did that for about a week until my wife and I looked at each other at one point and said, this is really stupid. I mean, why are we doing this? There are other choices. We could have let him grab a cactus, and that would have been what we're going to talk about in a moment, natural consequences, and he probably wouldn't have done it again. Or we could just put the thing on the shelf, which we finally decided to do, saying that's not worth making a rule about. Choose the things you're going to battle over very carefully. Make sure they are things that are important to your child's development as a human being. Now, one of the things I've noticed is that as you have more children, you tend to relax your rules, don't you? If you've got more than one child or two children, you've probably relaxed your rules a little bit. I came across this one piece which I found rather cute. I think it was written by a woman. Apologies to you women, but it was a reflection on a mother's experience through three children. Preparing for birth. First baby, you practice deep breathing religiously. Second baby, you don't practice breathing because you remember it didn't help last time. And third baby, you ask for an epidural in your eighth month. A crying baby. First baby, at the first sign of a whimper or frown, you pick up the baby. Second baby, you pick up the baby when her wails threaten to wake your firstborn. Third baby, you teach your three-year-old how to rewind a mechanical swing. Babysitters, the first baby. First time you leave your baby with a sitter, you call home five times. Second baby, before you walk out the door, you leave a number where you can be reached. Third baby, you leave instructions for the sitter to call only if there's blood. Or his activities at home. You spend time every day just gazing at the baby. Second baby, you spend time making sure your older child isn't poking or hitting the baby. Third baby, you spend a little bit of time every day hiding from the children. Or this one, swallowing coins. First child, you rush the child to the hospital and demand an x-ray. Second child, you carefully watch for the coin to pass. Third child, you deduct it from his allowance. Now that's somebody looking at this whole thing humorously, but the reality is that as the number of children increase, we realize that the rules we made for the first one maybe weren't all that important. I was the seventh child in my family, and I didn't know there were rules, hardly, because they just became a more open and free atmosphere under my mother's tutelage. So the first one is choose your rules carefully. Don't get stuck in making all these little kind of things that make no difference to this child's upbringing eventually. Second one is, you should be clear about those rules with your children. Child shouldn't have to guess whether he or she is breaking a rule. There should be clear boundaries that are set and an understanding of what the consequences are should the child choose to go over that boundary. Now, that's a rather simple one, but it's an important one. Because if the child doesn't know, then it becomes a very insecure atmosphere for them. Children want boundaries. A few years ago, there was a study done where they removed the fences at an elementary school. And they found that when the fences, the boundaries were removed, the children all huddled in the middle because they were scared. They felt insecure. Well, if the boundaries are not clear or they're not there, children go up with a sense of insecurity. And so there should be a sense of being clear about the boundaries and what are the consequences for stepping over those boundaries. The next suggestion is catch your children doing what's right. It's far more powerful to give a child encouragement when they're choosing to do the right thing than punishing them when they do the wrong thing. In fact, encouragement studies have shown is incredibly powerful. Years ago, there was a group of women at Radcliffe College, five of them, and they were all aspiring writers. And so they decided that they were going to help each other become better writers. So they began to gather together once a week, and one of the women would present something that they had read, and then the others would critique it. But they had an emphasis on encouraging everything good they could find in that piece of writing. Now, five men at Harvard College decided to do the same thing. And they met together, and each week one would present something they had written, and the others would critique it. But they were brutal in their critique. And their idea was, they thought, if we could just, you know, really bash every bad thing in this piece of writing, we'll become better writers. Well, years later, it was noted that four out of the five women became published authors, and none of the men became published authors. You're going to go a long way if you catch your children doing what's right, and then you say to them, good job. Encourage them in what's right. Choose to catch them doing right. Fourthly, be consistent. Don't give in to whining one time and not another. Don't punish something one time and not another. Be consistent. Be calm. It's never a good thing to discipline a child in anger. Now, sometimes we respond to a child's what they're doing with anger. But the job is to be calm. Wonderful story about a guy in a grocery store is pushing along. A woman notices he's got a three-year-old in the seat there, about 3 years old, in the cart with him. And the kid is just wailing up a stream. And the guy is talking to him all the way and saying, you know, be calm, Albert. Just calm down now, Albert. Yeah, get control of yourself, Albert. You're okay, Albert. And a woman noticed this and, you know, came up to the man and said, yeah, I'm just really impressed the way you talk to your son. I mean, you're so consistently encouraging and calm with him. And, wow, your son Albert is really blessed to have you as a parent. The guy said, oh, he said, my name's Albert. His name is Sam. So he's talking to himself. Be calm. You may have to do that, to be calm, you know, and not just lash out in anger. And then use a variety of methods is another suggestion. Spanking is a method that most experts say should be reserved for rebellion against you as an authority or a person. So not something to be used lightly. But there are other ways to do it. There are natural consequences. I gave the example of grabbing a cactus. That would be a natural consequence for a behavior. There are other consequences. If a child won't eat at meal, a natural consequence would be, okay, you're not eating again until the next meal, so you're going to go hungry. That's the kind of thing of natural consequences. If they can't play with a child, there would be a logical consequence. That's another type of discipline. A logical consequence, you're not playing well with children, I'm going to remove you, and you have to be by yourself in a room, or you have to play with somebody else in your room. Or the logical consequence of, okay, you're always late for dinner, all right, you don't eat tonight. Those, find a variety of ways of bringing your child back into a correct way, living and important within the boundaries of life that God has designed. And we could go on and on with this stuff about be prompt with your discipline and that sort of thing. But one of the most important suggestions I can give you is to study your child. In his book, You and Your Child, Charles Swindoll talks about a great passage, proverb again, you know, train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. And he takes that phrase, in the way he should go, and says in the Hebrew, what it really means is the way he himself or herself should go. In other words, each child is a unique creation of God, and part of our job as parents is to discover what is God doing with this child? What does God intend with this child? So you study your child. Where are they strong? Are they strong in academics? Well, how can you encourage that? How can you give them opportunities to grow in their knowledge? Are they great in athletics? Well, how can you encourage that? How can you help them become better at it? How can you help them make good choices about sports? And how can you teach them discipline and making commitments to a sporting team? Are they good in music? Find those things that they're good at and find ways to encourage them to become what they should become as God has created them to become. And then also study your child to find out where are those areas where they tend to wander off, where they may need discipline, they may need bringing back into the fold, going the right direction. And for each child, that might be different. And so your job as a parent is to try to study your child and figure out, how do I take this child and help them become everything God has designed them to be? Now, our model for discipline, of course, is God Himself. In the book of Hebrews, we have defined for us how God disciplines us. This is what it says in chapter 12, verses 1 through 5. Have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the one he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share in His holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it." May God bless you as you take up that incredibly important task of parenting, or maybe you're a grandparent and you have responsibility for caring for your grandchildren, or maybe you're part of a church and you see a need in the children's ministry of your church. May God bless you as you have an incredibly important role to play, playing the role of shepherd, taking care of sheep to the glory of God.